You're listening to the Podcast Detroit Network. Visit www.podcastdetroit.com for more information. The views and opinions expressed on this show do not necessarily represent those of the network, its advertisers, owners, or sponsors.
How's it going, everybody, guys? We're at Podcast Detroit again.
Yeah.
Always fun.
Here we are.
Talking about a new movie.
Very new.
Newer than the last one we did.
Much newer than the last one we did.
Came out last week.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
We are the group from What We Remember. We do a podcast about a movie we haven't seen in a very long time, and then we see what we got right and what we got wrong. We watch the movie. So we screw up a lot of stuff in the part one, and then we fix it and make it better in the part two. But in this podcast, we're just going to be talking about a new movie, breaking it down for you, telling our thoughts. WhatRemember.com is where to find us. Search that in any podcast app of choice. Twitter.com/WhatRemember. Facebook.com/WhatRemember. WhatRememberPodcast@gmail.com for comments and questions. Thanks.
Were there two or three bad guys in Home Alone? And who was that forgetful fish in Finding Nemo? Join us as we're watching films. See what we remember and what memories we kill. Let's start the show. Here we go. This is what we remember.
I'm Bradley Jones.
I'm Andrew Moldenhauer.
And I'm Andy Huber.
And this is what we remember, or what we saw.
This is what we saw.
We saw Ready Player One.
We did. We just saw it a couple days ago, was it?
It just came out 2 weeks?
Yeah.
That's fairly new for us.
We're actually on top of it for once.
We actually planned this out.
Yeah.
Whoa, that's not what we're supposed to do.
Mm-hmm.
We're just seeing our pants kind of guys.
Mm-hmm. Steven Spielberg movie.
Borg.
Spielberg movie.
Big
and it has
book,
it
hit,
has a
big
lot of
following.
Yeah.
Yeah, it there's a huge
people
fan base.
This
I didn't hear much
book.
Of even about this book before
you kidding
the
me?
Before I heard about the
people
movie.
People couldn't shut up about this book.
Before I heard about the movie, I don't think I heard almost
everyone
anything about
and
the
their mother told me to read this book. My mom called me. It was every day telling me to read this book.
She always cared more about you, Brad.
Well, she said that too, and she sent over leftover lasagna. It was actually a really nice experience.
I love her lasagna. Dang it.
Yeah.
But you did read this book, Brad.
I read the book, and I enjoyed it.
I don't think either of the Andes did.
Well, I thought you said you read,
I did.
The book.
Okay.
You turned it down.
You
turned down for what?
I read maybe a quarter of this book, and I did not like it. I did. And it was weird because it seemed that everybody I knew loved this book, and I did not. I couldn't get into it. I couldn't.
I liked it a lot.
As a person that
it was fun.
That lives my life basically as a giant series of references to pop culture, I don't know why.
Is it too close to home? Is that the problem with it?
The book, to me, it felt like that guy who you go to like a Q&A with an author or something, and he's the guy that has to get up during the Q&A to ask a question, and about like 10 minutes into him asking a question, you realize he doesn't actually have a question to ask. He just wanted to get up and prove to everybody that he knew the most about this topic. That's what the book felt like to me. And
so, Andy, it was like you were looking at yourself, and
yes,
that kind of scared
I know,
you.
That
you didn't
was
like
the
reflection of yourself.
Yeah, I reference.
You
do,
hate
oh
yourself.
Andy, can I ask you a question? When you get up,
know.
Do you look in the mirror in the morning, or do you just ignore that and just go on with your
I mean,
day?
Have you seen my hair? Because I haven't in years. I don't use mirrors. I don't.
The no mirror house.
I quite liked the book, and the movie is very different, as you would assume.
Yeah.
But let's talk about the movie, and then we can later discuss the differences.
Yeah, and I'll say I was going into this blind.
Totally blind.
Yeah. Knew nothing about it. Didn't read the book.
Mm-mm.
Didn't know there was a book until like maybe a year ago when I saw you had the book.
Right.
And that was it.
Yeah.
And now it's a movie.
Mm-hmm. So what did you have expectations? You saw the trailer, I guess.
Yeah, you would have seen
it. So you just thought there were a bunch of
saw
references.
At least one trailer, right? Probably.
I normally don't watch trailers. I might have watched maybe half of the trailer.
Or
Brad was
anticipating.
The one trying to see trailers.
Yeah, I don't see trailers. I hate trailers. Stop watching trailers, people.
I was anticipating, just based on what I did see in the trailer, that they live in like a Second Life world, and
sort of.
Yeah, sort of.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And that was pretty much it. Like, people go into the Second Life and they be someone else. And obviously in the trailer, they have like Freddy Krueger and like Jason and all these like 80s movie icons. And that was pretty much all I saw. So I didn't really know what this was.
Yeah.
Did you ever see the movie Gamer? It was kind of like
with,
that too.
With Gerard Butler?
Yeah, it was great.
Yeah.
It was really fun.
Same thing.
It was very similar to this movie.
It kind of is, yeah. I was surprised. I went in dreading seeing this movie. I did not want to go see this.
Uh-huh.
And I was pleasantly surprised.
It's a fun movie.
It was a fun movie.
Let's get that out of the way.
And I liked it. I enjoyed it. Yeah. I don't know if the audience enjoyed it.
There were some laughs and some giggles, but
the audience, I was torn because
I think it'd be confusing.
Yeah. I was torn because we sat at the very back of the theater, so we weren't like amongst people. Yeah. We were like
in the
behind
back
people.
And off to the side too. We weren't even in
the
middle.
And
that's the nature of that theater anyway, because we're separated by like two armrests, just like you and I.
Yeah.
The theater going now is just like sit you in that lazy boy and separate you from the rest of the world.
I love it.
It feels like
and
home.
Let you enjoy. Yeah, it's supposed to be that home beautiful. Entertainment experience, yeah. But you do lose that interaction with an audience.
Sure. Yeah. But what I'm saying is like we weren't in the thick of like the group, so I couldn't really gauge how the audience was taking it. But I didn't really hear many laughs at jokes and excitement.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I guess it wasn't too jokey either. I mean, there were some goofy things, but
yeah. I mean, I would say anyone
there was fun things happening.
You need to expect that it's a young adult book turned into a PG-13 young adult movie. So yeah, I do think you kind of need to keep it in that perspective.
They do drop an F-bomb.
They do, yeah. They get their one.
They get their
and
one
they used
there.
It.
At the very end of the movie.
Yeah. but yeah, I was surprised. And I think for me, the biggest point is that there's just an advantage that this has
visually.
In film, visually, that the book doesn't, where a film can take all the references that are in the book and just put them visually anywhere on the screen you want, and people can kind of absorb them at their leisure. They can see them. Maybe you don't notice them. Maybe you see them again once, like you rewatch the movie and you catch a bunch of stuff you didn't see. The book doesn't have that luxury, so it has to, in my case, painfully
describe
every single reference that is present.
So that's the trade-off.
And that's, yes.
Because in the book, you feel more for the characters, and they're very lonely in the book.
Okay.
Particularly our main character, Wade Watts. Mm-hmm. In the movie, he's already got friends. He's off into the world doing sweet stuff.
Yeah, that's
he's
true.
Doing car racing.
He seemed
things.
Like he was doing pretty good. Like, I mean, he kind of lives, he's not like, well off or anything.
If I'm already making book comparisons, the only place he has access to is their school. Because everyone gets access to that. He doesn't even have an avatar. You're supposed to just go in there as like a blind version of yourself.
Right.
And he can't explore all the fun things in the world. Like we get that montage of there's this land with the cool casino and there's this space station land. And it's all just
quick narration.
Yeah.
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 Set up.
You know, a bunch of voiceover setting up the world.
And Wade Watts himself knows that exists because he's obsessed with Halliday. And he wants to get outside of it, but he knows
we should say Halliday is the guy who created Oasis, which is the game that everybody plays.
Yes. Right. Who is played by Mark Rylance, who is amazing.
He loved every minute
he was on the screen.
There were some acting choices that were a little rough.
Were they strange?
They were brilliant? Is that what you were saying?
They go into his memories and they actually like play out a scene in front of you.
Mm-hmm.
And some of him like trying to be awkward and nerdy work, and then other times don't.
I thought the times for me that didn't work with his memory stuff, it was more just the staging of the memory. Like there was the very first challenge. So a spoiler alert for anyone listening.
Spoiler alert nonstop this episode.
But like the very first challenge, he finds a memory in this museum of Halliday memories
at the Halliday Inn, they call it, I think, in the film, right?
You're already on it. We're like 5 minutes in. And he gets this idea. This has been going on for 5 years at this point, this challenge.
This is
and
the place
no one has even
Wade
beaten
goes.
The first thing. Mm-hmm. And he like does the race once for the viewers. I assume he's been doing it for a long time.
Yes.
But then he's just like, oh, I have an idea, and goes to see one specific memory and watches it. And for some reason is about to leave before the memory's even over. Like he's decided there's nothing of value.
Mm-hmm.
Why not at least stay until the end? I thought that was a little strange.
It's also a memory he's seen like a bunch of times, too. So he should be able, because in the book he can basically recite and recall just knowledge just in general. The little place he goes to doesn't exist. There's a literal like ebook that has all this information, personal diaries of Halliday in it.
Yeah.
And he has it memorized. Mm-hmm. And we even see that with the group that is working for the Sixers,
IOI.
The IOI. Yeah. There's an evil corporation that's trying to solve. So Halliday has no one's seen the film.
Yes.
Yeah. Let's start with the basics. There's the Oasis, and
there's a contest inside the Oasis.
Right, because Halliday passed away, and as he was passing away, he said there are three Easter eggs. If you can solve these, you will get ownership of the Oasis.
It's like Willy Wonka.
Yep, it is.
And then you'll also get like half a trillion dollars in maybe coins.
Yeah, stocks or coins.
Yeah.
But you're basically...
You become wealthy.
Money in the Oasis is worth a lot.
Yeah, it's real money.
Yes.
Because he bought things in the game and then received them in real life. Mm-hmm. And so everyone has been trying to solve these puzzles, but there's really no clues that are immediately apparent. And so you have to try to just kind of decipher them.
That is true and isn't true because they do know about the race. In the book, that is very much true that nobody knows even where the first clue is.
Oh, okay. So they don't even know the race is the first clue?
There's not a race in the book.
Oh.
In the book, Halliday has hidden the first clue on the planet that is accessible to everybody, which is the school planet.
Okay.
Because you don't need money or anything else to get to it. Anyone can find it. And mm-hmm. that's like kind of his goal is he wanted the contest to be open to everybody regardless of their stature. So there was this – Wade Watts was looking around the place. He finds this weird cave. He goes in there and he finds the Tomb of Horrors, which is from D&D, which is like Halliday's favorite
right.
thing. And he fights the, whatever the Lich King version of okay. – I don't know the exact name, but D&D nerds are really mad at me.
Yeah.
But then he beats them in a game of Joust, the old
arcade
game
Atari
with the
game
ostriches
whatever, yeah.
that fight each other.
Mm-hmm.
And he keeps losing. And then Artemis, who is the – female interest and also like one of the protagonists, other protagonists.
Yeah,
in the
movie. Co-protagonist sort of.
She also finds it at the same time and they meet up and she still has like all that notoriety. But they both try a bunch of times. He eventually figures out that if they just switch positions like on the physical arcade cabinet, he has an advantage over the Lich King. And he wins right away, and like Artemis is on his case, like trying to like, what did you do? What's the secret? And this one, he just wins that race, goes backwards, and tells everybody.
Yeah. So he's So back to the memory is like he's walking away from this memory as it's playing, all sad because he thought it was going to say something profound, and then he catches like Halliday says something in the last second about like it would just why can't you just go really fast? And does he even say backwards?
Backwards.
Or he just says,
fast.
Okay. Yeah, why can't you just go back really fast or something? And that's when he gets the stroke of genius to reverse and gets taken to like a secret beneath the track track and gets to like bypass everything and just shoots out right at the finish line.
What is going on at that race, guys? We got King Kong flying out of there.
T-Rex.
We got the T-Rex flying
out of there.
Wrecking
balls.
Mm-hmm.
We got everybody in the world trying to race on this track.
Yeah, you got the crazy jump, like Hot Wheel style jump over the river.
There are like chain chomps, almost like cannonball things.
And he is driving like Artemis has like a Tron style light cycle.
Yes. She has the one from Akira.
Oh, is that what I didn't even recognize that? You thought I would have because I do like that movie.
He has the DeLorean from Back to the Future.
Well, he has the Ecto-1 DeLorean. So it's like a DeLorean just with I feel like Ghostbusters decals. Which is cool.
Which is way more visual of a thing to see than just fighting a guy inside of a cave in an arcade machine.
Yeah.
So I can understand the change.
Mm-hmm. I think it makes more sense when you're moving to a movie, I think.
But you lose the sense of Wade Watts being essentially a nobody.
Yeah, and you
with
do.
With this film.
And at the same time, for me, it lent this weird feeling of people have been doing this race for 5 years knowing it's step one.
Right.
And no one thought to go backwards. And I actually,
right,
it was
right.
Well, what was funny to me is
think of anybody who like would game break a game now that comes out.
I don't
within
even.
A week,
this isn't even hypothetical for me because
especially there in the future too.
When I was in college, Subaru did a challenge where they put like this crummy little online racing game on their website.
Andy, did you win a car
that you could go in?
Andy, did you win a car?
Andy's never won anything.
And,
in his life.
No, they put this little racing game up and it was a contest. And if you had the fastest time, they were going to fly like the top three people out to like this rally race thing and you did like a whole week long school of rally race stuff. It took literally 2 days for people to realize the game hadn't programmed out that you could just go backwards and then back across the finish line and log a time. It was 2 days and there were times of like 2 seconds.
Wow.
Did
those people make it? Did they go?
No, they eventually fixed it and everyone had to redo their times. So they wiped the board and had to redo it again. And then a friend of mine actually won and went out to that. But like knowing that happened, I thought it was a little silly, the idea of everyone doing this race for 5 years and no one going backwards.
Breaking.
Yeah. Right.
Because that's like, I feel like that's just standard on the list of how to beat a racing game is trying that. But it was still cool and it looked good.
Yeah.
It gets a little CGI messy.
I like that
points,
Bigfoot
but...
that Z's or H is driving.
Oh yeah,
Z's
yeah. The monster truck.
The Bigfoot. Specifically the Bigfoot.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
I mean, there's licenses okay. all over.
Yeah, it was a Bigfoot, but he wasn't even paying attention.
We
get like in the synopsis at the very beginning when he's just describing the world they live in because mm-hmm. it's in 2045 or something mm-hmm. like that.
Yeah,
Blade Runner 2047.
Yeah, and he lives in Cincinnati or Cleveland.
Right.
And he basically says, like, eventually, like, people stopped fixing problems and just tried to ignore them.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's why their world kind of turned into the way that it did.
Yeah, they talk like everyone retreated essentially into this virtual world because it was
way better than
the real
reality
world.
Is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the only reason, which like, people still nice. Bother with the real world like is to eat, essentially.
Yeah. Like, it's kind of like an interesting thought.
And there's a lot of like, food.
I could see it happening that way.
Right. You can be whoever you want in the Oasis. It makes sense. Like, I absolutely understand. And even without that level of technology, I mean, I remember when World of Warcraft came out, there were people who got so addicted to that game that mm-hmm. they just stopped. They would drop out of school. They would just spend all day doing that. That was their mm-hmm. life now.
In the Oasis, you can have a job and you can go to school, at least in the book. Yeah. That's like fairly mentioned.
I don't
need your normal life anymore where you can just live out in this virtual
world. I did find myself thinking about, like, oh man, that would make, like, you know, working from home is just like the default now because everyone just goes to a virtual office. So you don't mm-hmm. need office space. I was thinking about all the logistics of that and I was like, yeah, that would totally change how all that works.
I bet there are certain people in like South Korea that are doing stuff like this, making money off of virtual games.
Mm-hmm. Plugging into avatars in front of
like mining
desk.
Coins for people.
Oh, that's been for a long time. Yeah.
So there's some reality here already. But I feel like we don't get a good, strong sense of who this character is.
No.
Or who this...
That's the biggest problem.
Yes. Who the protagonist is. The like, beginning. We see him as
we just see him
have,
avatar. Like, a bad life. Like, his parents are already dead. He's living with his aunt.
Who has
who's
an abusive
got a
boyfriend.
A deadbeat boyfriend.
Yeah.
And,
yeah.
Like, he just,
I don't
like,
think I got enough to really feel for him,
yeah,
though.
He
like,
just
I know
says,
that,
like, oh, we live in the poor part of town, right. So we're poor. But, I mean, he goes to his neat little trailer where he does his VR stuff. So he's got his own little space.
He's not relatable in any way.
Right. Yeah. Like, right. That's him. What I'm trying to get at.
He just explains stuff. He's exposition, is the problem.
Yes.
He's the Winston. And if you don't know that reference, in Ghostbusters, Winston gets brought in to tour you around the firehouse and show off all the gadgets of the world.
Right.
He's exposition. And this, you can't have your character do that, your main character.
Right.
And that's like a big problem with that. Maybe you should have had a
you
best friend.
You need an exposition
or,
character.
Right.
Yeah.
Don't give it to your main character to do.
And you're right. It is hard to probably establish some of the stuff in this universe. And you do lose something, especially with his character. You don't really feel... I didn't feel the sense of scope necessarily of 5 years of this contest and suddenly someone wins it. And
that's yeah.
Also, like, there's three challenges here, and like, what's the timeline on these challenges? Because like, they figure out the first one, and then the next two are just like immediate.
Oh yeah,
in the book, I
and
think
there's
it's
no
years that
clues.
Go by.
I'd be real frustrated if I was someone else, and I was like, oh, someone actually hit the leaderboard, and then like, I go to bed and wake up the next day, and I'm like, well, it was solved. Okay, it's all over. No more game that we've been thinking about for 5 years. Like,
right.
Because this game doesn't take place over that much time, I feel like. It was, you know, mm-hmm. just a couple of days almost.
Yeah.
They might have been longer, but they don't really telegraph it to you that much.
In the book, it's much longer.
Yeah.
There's like a year or so goes by before they even give an idea where the next clue is. It's so well hidden.
Yeah.
It sounds dumb, and I know that they won't – they probably like immediately didn't think of this or want to do this, but like I wanted more of him as a real person.
That would have been great.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah,
they're probably like, we don't want to show that
you get
at
that,
all,
you
but
get
I that wanted
in,
that.
You get that in the book, and they essentially take away his virtual world in the book for a long portion of it where he's just like a regular guy doing stuff.
Yeah. And
he's like struggling to even like pay to buy new VR gear.
There was very little real world things happening. And yeah, I wanted
Which
more of that world
kind
building.
Take you
I wanted
out a
to examine
bit.
This kind of – it's
right.
like semi – apocalyptic world almost to where
everyone's
it's kind of dystopian
in these stacked trailers
because
you don't need room to live it doesn't matter anymore.
You just need a space for VR
mm-hmm. and you need a bathroom and a place to eat. That's all you need.
Mm-hmm. So that was a little I did want more of that. There was really cool sequences that they managed to do in the Oasis, and I mean there were a few times where I felt a little overwhelmed just watching some CGI soup on the screen. Just a little too much. But it was neat. But yeah, more of the real world, I think, examining the disparity. Like, they run through it so fast. Even the opportunities they have to examine it. Like, he...
His deadbeat dad boyfriend guy gets mad at him.
Yep.
Like, steals his stuff. That would have been a great excuse to, like, take away his VR gear to show him what he has to do, like, in the real world without it. Like,
yeah.
Maybe go to, like, some, like, internet, you know... mm-hmm. cafe to do it.
No, absolutely. I would have loved that.
Or mm-hmm. or like even when like IOI.
Because that could have taken him immediately away from this girl that he's like infatuated with, and which that, is like stakes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, and even when he goes to and meets with her in real life, like when they blow
up
the
thing, she could be
mad
too because she wouldn't know why he's not there.
She could like already have a relationship with someone else, possibly like mm-hmm. that she had been working on, and
but
takes away his chances.
He finally meets up. Well, he meets up with her in real life, and like they spend the entire time like at one warehouse. You don't see. You don't see anything outside of that warehouse.
Right.
And then, like, IOI busts in, they escape somewhere else, and then they all go back in the Oasis again. And there was just not enough. I wanted more of that.
Right.
Let's talk about IOI for a moment, too. So IOI is basically a corporation that
is trying to win the contest.
Working on just winning the contest for themselves.
They make stuff for the Oasis. So whether it's VR gear or stuff in the game, like they make assets that go in the game and all sorts of stuff like that. So that's their business model.
They're like Google.
Yes. So they handle all this stuff within the game. And their evil
overlord
guy, who is Director Krennic. I don't actually know the actor's name, but he was the bad guy from Rogue One. He's a bad guy in this one.
He's in Bloodline as well.
He's a bad guy no matter how you cut
He is determined to
great actor
get ownership of the Oasis, because then they'll basically own the world.
Yes.
Is the threat.
They'll own that world.
Because they're the second largest corporation in the world. And the only one bigger is the
Ogden,
which owns the Oasis. And like
who's Halliday's business partner?
So knowing how big the two of them must be combined would be insane.
It's Steve Jobs and Bill Gates.
Yeah,
yeah.
So he has like a whole army of people dedicated to trying to solve these puzzles.
And right. There's just no heart to it. It's all about money.
Yes,
that's all that they care
and they're
about.
they're just pumping people into the game to try and figure it out. You know, as soon as they're a contest, they're having everyone just like come in. Oh, you failed. Okay, get out of this gear. Someone else is going to come in, and they're going to play. Okay, they failed. Get out of the mm-hmm. gear. Someone else comes in.
So you have like a whole army of people for this, and it was kind of interesting because at first I was thinking of like how they get all these people, but then I was thinking like they even make Wade an offer in the movie of saying like, oh, you're really good at these. We'll pay you a ton of money to come work for us and just do it for us.
It's like esports.
And I'm sure that's how everyone else that works there got recruited. Yeah. Like they were all good at this game, and IOI was like, hey, we'll pay you a salary if you're willing to play it all the time. And in this world, that's a really good opportunity. So it makes sense why all these people would they're pitched as the bad guys, but over the course of the film, they're made to be a bit more sympathetic. At least the researchers, I think, are. Like they're all genuinely excited at the end when Wade wins the game because they're just interested in the story. They want to know about the puzzle. They want it to be solved. For them, it's not about IOI winning. It's just the story itself
is
interesting to all these people that do work for IOI.
Mm-hmm.
But the head guy, and he has like this – there's like a division of IOI that is
– The Sixers.
A debtor's prison.
Oh.
Which they – what are they? They're called – what are they called? Something centers –
I can't remember, but basically, like, if you buy, if you buy things in the game, but you can't pay for them, like,
you have to work.
You have to go to like a work camp.
Yeah,
you live in a little cell, and you just
and you're in the game.
It's kind of terrifying. Yeah,
You're just doing mining tasks, whatever they want.
Loyalty center is what they call it. Yeah, and the in the movie at least the premise is that Artemis's dad was one of these people who went way into debt in the game, ended up like working himself to death in one of these like centers. Yeah.
So Wade doesn't really have any other kind of stakes at the beginning. It's later brought up by Artemis that this is happening.
Yes.
If they take over, that's going to be really bad. You have to understand that this isn't fun and games anymore. This is a serious contest, and you need to figure
this actually,
it out.
I really like this moment because it reminded me of, again, Rogue One, where Cassian has this moment with
using all these characters' names from Star Wars.
The Spanish guy from
everyone
Rogue
is just falling off the podcast. You got to be very general.
Like he has this moment where he talks to the main lady. Who's just like, you know, the rebellion's real for like me. I've been doing this since I was six. Just because you suddenly care,
right?
Like you and Nina, and she almost has that same conversation with Wade at this moment where she's like for you, this is just fun. Like you do this because you think it'd be cool. You like the Oasis, and that's cool. I'm doing this because if we don't win and IOI wins, like people are, there's real life consequences. People are going to die. It's going to be,
he's kind of got like this naive, like idealistic vision of who this guy is who created the Oasis, but she's trying to bring him back to reality and say like, there are people that are using this for evil things.
Yes.
And manipulating
people.
She has
to be like, you need to understand that there's real stakes involved here. It's not fun and games for everybody here.
Mm-hmm.
And this movie does feel kind of like a copy and paste from a lot of films that I've seen in the last couple of years.
Which I feel like it has to be, you know, is in itself very, it's a meta appropriate for this film because the whole film is about referencing previous works.
But it makes the parts that aren't that even better, I think. Like the Shining moment.
Oh, yes. The Shining moment is fantastic.
The best part of the film. It was so good.
So they recreated the entire set for The Shining, what it looks
one
like.
One for one.
Yes, it's really good.
And it's impressive.
Yeah, it looks great.
I was half wondering if they just like you had some like
it might have been a mix of footage.
Footage
so,
from the
yeah, I thought about that too, and I didn't do any research, but it looked like the lady that got out of the bathtub and walked forward, she looks like she was cut out right from
the
movie.
I was thinking the same. Yeah, I was thinking
that
too.
It looked like the same actress and everything, and I'm sure it was.
Yeah. So yeah, they have to like solve a puzzle in The Shining, and it was really fun. That was really cool. And they have, so all these horror elements from The Shining are now like bosses they have to beat for the game, which is really neat. I'm trying to think of any of the other major.
So, and in this group of people, there are, there's five of them, right? Mm-hmm. So there's the main character, there's Artemis, then there's this big, I don't know what she is
her name.
H, yeah.
But
H.
You're made to think it's a guy. Because you can be whatever you want in the Oasis. And she even makes that very point.
Yes.
Like that could be a 300-pound
Artemis
woman
could be,
from Detroit.
Some dude living in a basement in Detroit.
In his mom's house, yeah.
Right.
Everyone in the theater did chuckle when they said that line.
Yeah. Well, we live in Detroit. Yes. that's gonna get that cheap pop. And then we have Shao and Daito, who are the samurai brothers.
Yes, one of which is a 12-year-old. So that was like another, you know, you could be anyone in the Oasis. Like,
right.
And they made a point saying he's like the coolest 12-year-old on the planet probably.
Yeah, without a doubt.
I didn't like, though, with H, they altered her voice to deceive you. And then because they altered the voice, there were times where there were lines I couldn't really totally understand.
That was upsetting.
It got a little muddled. It
should have just been a guy's voice.
Yeah.
It didn't have to be hers.
Because like you have this fake person, and then you also have this like obviously fake voice as well. So I didn't really feel for that person too much when they were in The Shining and, you know, drowning in the blood and like being attacked by this like witch with an axe. And,
well, she was the one character who said she had never seen The Shining, so that's kind of fun for the people in the audience that are also haven't seen The Shining and are kind of going.
That almost reassures the audience. So it's like, if you don't get the reference, that's fine.
We're gonna show you.
Yeah, like you get to experience it like this other character.
The scene was great.
Yeah. Like, so she does approach it as someone who would see it for the first time now, like with a creepy lady getting out of the tub, like, oh, it's okay, creepy lady, you don't have to come over here. Like, that was really funny. It did remind me of, like, experiences seeing scary movies in theaters where you have audience people doing that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. And there are some scenes of, like, Jack Nicholson from, like, the side or his leg or whatever looked kind of cool. And you see the maze at the end, and he's like coming at you with the axe. There's just some cool moments in that that sequence. The best part of the film,
because
they
intensify The Shining, which I'll say, like, The Shining is interesting. I wouldn't really call it scary.
Oh, it's
but
very
if
scary.
You,
I'm so scared of that movie.
Really?
Yeah,
really? I'm so not scared personally of scared of it, but like
just the dialogue when
it came out
and delivery
in the
of it's
80s,
really creepy.
Like, I'm sure it was very scary.
I feel that way about The Exorcist, where The Exorcist isn't scary to me.
Yeah,
I would agree. A lot of other people.
Yeah, The Shining scares me kind of like It Follows scares me. It's like a thriller horror where it's like a slow, constant horror kind of thing instead of jump scares all the time at you, which is...
Yeah.
So I like it as a movie, but...
In the book, they go to war games. He plays out the war games.
I do remember you talking about that.
And he has to like reenact the entire thing.
Yes. Word for word as Matthew Broderick.
Which makes sense that Steven Spielberg would choose The Shining since he had a close relationship with Stanley Kubrick and ended up making... AI when he passed away.
More
so
visually
I guess that
pleasing
makes
to see, too, than that.
Yeah.
I guess.
Yep.
And it's a movie more people know.
That's true.
That goes back to like Andy's comment of the smartest kid in the room. I knew you guys don't know about Zork or whatever that game is that he plays in the book, too.
Yeah.
I wanted to bring this point up a while ago.
Like yesterday or like the day before?
Well, when we saw it.
Oh. Okay.
But I didn't because I wanted to talk about it now.
Well, let's not talk about it.
No, we're going to
skip it though.
It's fine.
Hold it for the next one. If it's that good, you can hold on to that egg.
Well,
hatch it later.
No, I'm hatching it now.
Oh, it's cooked.
Yeah, it's already
this thing is pre-baked. That's boiling.
Now I'm just hungry.
It's a hard-boiled idea.
So this movie is set in 2045, and we don't really have a total sense of how old the guy... What's the guy's name?
Halliday?
Halliday.
Yeah.
We don't have a sense of how old he is when he died, when he was born around, but we do get 1 year about the girl that he went on one date with and it didn't work out. She was born in 1975, which would have made her 5 years old when the 80s were around, and the entire... Oasis is basically just references to the 80s, and that's it. There's no 90s. There's no well, – it might be a –
So that's the only a part that's
a couple
important.
70s references, but
yeah.
There's really only the 80s. Like, that decade is, like, the only thing that matters.
Well, you have to imagine that's that there's the other people who don't care about the contest that are just living in the Oasis for fun.
Right.
But the group of people that we're involved with are obsessed with Halliday. They're obsessed with the contest, and what he was obsessed with was the 80s.
And I noticed that specifically, that around them in the Oasis.
The 80s?
I think he just – loved. Like,
did
you
grow
see it,
up in the 80s?
Well, you see at the end of the film him playing like the Atari in that fun little room, which is like the kid's room that you want as a as
oh
a,
man, yeah,
it's
that's
so
the,
cool.
That's like, yeah, the movie
it's
you see,
TV
like,
and
yeah, okay, the kid has in the cool movie, and you wish you had that room,
mm-hmm. yeah,
growing up.
I guess I just didn't know if he was like around in that time, but I guess that makes sense because I don't know when he died, I don't know when he was born.
I mean, I was born in 84 and I still got like all the 80s references from you
say,
know, growing
Andy,
up in 89 and 90.
You basically lived the 80s all day. Like that's
and you were born in 1996.
What are you, eight? Like,
be like going back in time.
But even growing up in the 90s, you love to. It's the decade before you is the one that you love.
But in the movie, I was actually going to mention that. Yeah, we follow characters that are obsessed with the 80s because that's what Halliday was. But you could see other things. Like, I mean, they have Iron Giant. That's 90s. That's like a big point in the film.
Sure.
Like when they're doing the race, you can see other cars. Like the Mach 5 is there, and like Speed Racer is like.
I will say disproportionately, though, more 80s than any other decade.
Yes. Oh, yeah, definitely.
So I imagine, I guess he grew up in. Around the 80s, and that was like what he loved, mm-hmm. and so he created it that way. But then,
but you have
everybody that is an avatar has in some way some reference to the 80s. Not everybody, many people.
Like there was
like you see like a guy who's dressed as Beetlejuice who has like one line who pops in and
Goro.
Goro.
Yeah, there's a Goro. Yeah. Yep. Yeah. There's a person that's dressed as Tracer from Overwatch, which is a much more modern reference. Mm-hmm. That happened. She shows up like a couple of times in the movie.
Sure.
So I'll justify it just by saying that everyone involved in those costumes and things and the contest are that obsessed with Halliday.
Yeah.
But there's a group outside of the world that we never really get to see, which is just the closed scope of how this movie has to work to move forward.
Yes.
But there's all sorts of that stuff.
And they
out
can
there
make themselves, the, yeah, they can make the them game. Look however they want. So I'm sure there's references to all sorts of periods or things or completely original.
Yeah. Yeah, whatever you
too,
like to,
so it doesn't
you know,
have to be.
Doesn't
right.
have to be 80s, yep. but that's just what we were around with because that's what everyone cared about.
And, they do kind of show you that side of the economy in the world too, where like H is good at building. She's like building that Iron Giant robot for somebody else who's paying her to do it. Like that's her job is essentially commissions of making assets for in the Oasis.
And that happens all the time with people like buying Warcraft accounts or paying someone else to paint their Warhammer figurines or.
Or yeah, you even
people
see
who work at Google who whose time is more valuable than their money, they'll just pay someone else to do work for them.
Right
at Google.
Well, at Google.
Well, and you'll see like you can even see companies like I'm trying to think of I think BioWare. One of them was they've tried multiple times to Bethesda has tried multiple times to implement like skin stores where people could submit their own skins that they've made that other people could buy. Whereas that has been previously been a free marketplace kind of thing where everyone just does it for free and they've tried to monetize it a number of times. But essentially they've implemented that with the Oasis where you can do it if you really want something, but you don't have the skills to make it, you can pay someone to do it for you. Mm-hmm. So it was kind of a neat, again, part of the world building that I liked, but I wanted more.
And they get key number two from the Shining Room.
Yes.
There's a room full of zombies for some visual reason.
Yep.
And then,
well, they meant it's oh, another
the,
reference.
The, is that
within
the, like
the
dance
reference.
Scene?
The
dancing,
yeah, the, and they have to jump to the girl who was Halliday's girlfriend and give her a smooch.
Yep,
or just go
they
out
ask
and dance
her
with
to dance. Yeah, because he didn't in real life.
It was the
was
one
his
thing
missed
he never
opportunity.
Did.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yep, and who and then she married his Simon Pegg's character, his best bud.
Yep.
Which is a little weird.
And then she ended up dying. But they only
well,
knew
it's
each
not
other.
Really weird, though.
Halliday
they
only
make
knew
a point of
for
it.
A little bit.
Yeah. They make a point of it in the movie saying, like, he only went on one date with her and he didn't even, like.
If anything, he comes off bad.
Yeah. Halliday. Yeah. Like, he's now obsessed with her, I guess. Right. And
Like, that's kind of...
It's not really the other guy's fault that
yeah,
he
that's fair.
Ended up marrying her. You can't be like, I'm mad at you because I went on a date with her once and it was terrible, and I wanted her forever.
Yeah, I really liked, in the memories, Simon Pegg and Mark Rylance interacting with each other. I thought the two
Simon
of them...
Simon Pegg? Isn't that Martin Sheen?
What?
Was it Martin Sheen?
No, that was Simon Pegg.
Simon Pegg.
Wow. I thought it was Martin
what?
Sheen.
The two
Martin
of them...
Sheen.
It looked like Martin Sheen.
I thought the two of them did a really good job as two friends that... are, you know, at the startup company building a game together. I thought their interactions, it felt really did feel like two friends just making something that they're passionate about. Throughout the entire thing, even at the end, Simon Pegg shows up once they win and is like, hey, like, I've got this thing. Like, this is what my friend would have wanted. He's just not kind of a nice guy.
Ogden's actually written very well in the book, and he plays a much bigger role, specifically at the end of the film, because all of them basically get banned from the Oasis and like lose all their stuff, and they go to Ogden for help, and because they're on the leaderboard, and he wants them to win, so he like sets them up with like the best gear and gets them back into the Oasis.
Is that how they all meet up in the book? Because I felt like they all met up in the same physical space really quick in this.
They
and
did.
I'm like, this is a global
game.
How
other.
Did they all end? How were they all in the same city?
They didn't get into the physical space until the very end of the book, where they go.
Oh,
to
you mean the
Ogden's
real
house.
World?
Yes,
I see what you mean.
Outside the Oasis. They all meet up. They're like, hey, we're all in Cleveland.
We're all buddies.
Together.
We're all
driving
a mile away
in this
from
truck.
Each other.
Yep. That's what happens. And we're driving in the truck. There was one of my favorite moments watching this movie with you guys was at the end when the hero gets his kiss with Artemis and he does like this. He like dips with her and then like it's suspended by the cables that hold his VR suit. And like it's the kind of this, you know, climactic moment in a sense where it's like the hero gets the girl and the theater is silent and Andy just goes, oh, what?
It was kind of lame.
It was. It was so teen movie, which it is. But
there's something interesting about this because like it's VR.
Weird.
So you're like wearing these glasses. You have these gloves. But like at times people are literally like walking.
Yeah.
In their living rooms, acting out walking in the game.
Yeah, well,
and they
like,
they do sort of at the very beginning try to say like, oh, well, there's these like treadmill things that you can walk on, but not everybody has that.
Well, and then they had people at the end when they had
so
the
I'm like,
big
how
battle.
Are people
they're
moving?
Like, they're standing in the streets doing their kung fu moves. I'm like, there are people that are going to injure other people because they are not paying attention.
Or they're
going to
walk
in
into the
world.
Street and get hit by a car.
Yeah, they're going to hurt each other. They need to, this is not
so you
okay.
have to like physically walk in real life to walk in this game. But people are in these like tiny apartment living rooms playing it as we like get little snapshots passing by their windows in the very beginning. But I'm like, you can if you could only do that, then you're only walking in the space of your living room.
Yeah.
How are you able to move past that physical space?
So some people
in the
are
Oasis?
More restricted than others.
And there,
and Wade Watts does have that sweet treadmill.
He's got the treadmill.
That's
but...
like something he probably saved up for and really wanted.
Mm-hmm.
And the other, just everyone else who like doesn't even care about that specific thing.
It depends
like
on your level of commitment, because even now with VR equipment, you
even thinking about like people
have controllers
PCs.
That can let you move, or you have ones that can track you around a room.
Or if you have like a $2,000 PC at your house because you really care about gaming, according to somebody who has like a $500 one.
Yeah.
Still, obviously, they can do some of the stuff you can, but you're definitely at an advantage.
Yeah, so there's different levels of investment, which they talk about whether he gets like the full like physical experience suit, and
that's,
they do like this kind of
like
awkward
that,
scene where she's trying to tease him, and they're
fun.
Doing some weird handsy
gets,
stuff, and you're like, I don't want to know about the sex suit
no,
stuff.
Don't, I don't want to know about first, that. They do a little tease at the beginning where they have like an adult
play like a
motel.
Or
whatever.
Or you could go there. that was a good little joke.
It.
Good little joke. Because you got to, you know, it's the internet. You're going to have to.
But they come
it,
back
sort
and,
of,
do,
so.
And do that haptic thing where they talk. They just talk about his crotch.
Yes.
And then Artemis goes underneath it and he gets haptic surges up through his groin.
And they're showing like the lights of the
jokes.
Suit are moving with her hand. And you're like, this is uncomfortable.
This is not good.
It's a little uncomfortable.
Yeah.
And then, like, well, later she kicks the bad guy in the nuts.
So
like, his suit is just destroying his nuts in the real life, I guess.
How does that work?
He stands up and, like, pulls off the codpiece. And I was like, I feel like if you're going into battle, you don't put on the codpiece haptic bit at that point. If you know you're going to be doing this, you're like, look, this is a threat. Let's just leave that off for now.
Oh, boy.
I don't need it.
Yeah, also, why would you want to feel the physical, like, sensation of being, like, shot in the game or, like, being kicked in the game?
Yeah,
like, why would
you
want
to, like,
that?
Set levels of how much that is, but like because if it's just little bumps or something, that could be fun, like a fun immersive kind
of
thing.
If it was just like a
but
rumble
if it's like
pack,
actual like
like a 4D experience where like scents come out at you,
yeah,
like wind blows in your hair or something like that.
yeah
So, but that is like
it's like you're at Disney World and like the Honey, I Shrunk the Kid ride.
I love that ride.
Oh,
that's
my God.
So
those
fun.
Things terrified me.
Honey, I Shrunk the Audience.
4D yeah. is not for me.
I love 4D. It's, you get the smells. I saw Ghostbusters, the whatever one came out, Answer okay. the Call, in 4D. And it was fun.
Oh, man.
When the car was like zooming down the highway, like rubber, like smells coming out of the seats.
I will say, actually, I saw Black Panther in like they have the 4D experience seats at the Imagine Theaters. And it was actually pretty cool. They like tilt and move you around and stuff. And it's,
sure,
it's
those are crazy. Those are a little bit different. Those are the D-Rock seats.
Yeah,
so
that's what I'm, yeah, the D-Rock.
But the other ones like will like blow
are you
away
like
yeah
no the air and mystery yeah. at your face and stuff
is,
like
is
that.
Is it just like you and two other people in these seats and then everyone else is in a regular
you know
seat?
What
yes,
the secret is there's
totally
one row
lame.
Of these crazy seats.
You look totally lame.
Yeah, I don't know. I think they
get
were the only
seat
seats
behind
still available.
Those seats. That way you still feel the vibration, but you don't have to pay as much.
Yeah, and you can change the sensitivity.
That's a Brad trick.
Because I saw Mad Max and I was in the row behind that seat, and I still felt the shakes in Mad Max.
You can adjust the sensitivity on those. I hit it like 2 out of 8, and I was still whipping all over the place. I can't imagine what Mad Max would be like with that seat cranked up. You'd be flying out of the chair.
Yeah, it was great.
And they don't have seatbelts.
It was so fun.
The next movie that we see,
we have to get the D-Rock seats. Yeah.
We have to see like a Fast and the Furious.
Yeah. Oh my gosh,
we have to see something with cars or jet engines.
Yes, yes. This movie would probably be crazy.
We'll see
seats.
Like Mad
a Star
Max
Wars
5.
Would be fine. Yeah.
So, no. Last challenge, I guess. We're kind of...
Yeah, so at the very end, they go to this... There's a planet where there's a lot of contests happening, but if you die in that planet, you lose all your stuff.
Yeah, it's like the...
See, I thought you when you die in general,
no.
you lose all your
stuff.
It's
the serious planet. PvP planet, yeah.
Yeah. It's the,
what is PvP?
Player versus player. Risk versus reward. How much are you willing to go in there for to risk in order to get something out of?
Yeah.
And that's how all of his friends are essentially making as much money as they do.
Yeah.
Sho, Daito, and H.
They go there and like kill enough guys and then just leave, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
Just,
you know.
That's I wouldn't do it. You know,
no, too dangerous.
You know, if I'm playing Diablo, I'm staying out of that dungeon.
Yeah, that was always bad. In Diablo 1, there was a part, like, if you died and your like game turned off, you'd lose all your stuff.
Yeah.
It happened multiple times. And it's
yeah.
Sad every
I would just, I'll just hang out and talk to the people.
Just stay and talk to the PCs.
I don't want
to
be
in the town center. Hey, how are you? Okay, going off. Bye.
All right, I'm done with the game
good,
today.
Good time. Yeah, it was fun. It was fun. I had a good time in my game.
Maybe go down to the, like the catacombs real quick and like, oh, that music's nice. Then just go right back out.
Whoa, too scary.
Back into the town. Maybe kill one thing and just
nice
like run
safe.
Back.
And then you like go back in and it's still there and you're like, I just killed you. What?
I kind of would have liked a few more video game jokes, like a loading screen or something like that to come
good.
Up or like a crash.
Yeah.
So they end up having to play an Atari game at the very end of the movie.
Yeah,
yes.
Like
which
playing
is,
a game in the game, mm-hmm. very Inception.
Right. And it's Halliday's
favorite game.
Not his favorite, but it's the first game that ever had an Easter egg in it.
Yes.
And this whole contest has been about Easter eggs.
Yes.
Yeah. And the game's called Adventure.
Mm-hmm.
And that's it.
Like, you see, IOI gets there first, and they put up this impenetrable shield. So they have this whole team of dudes trying to figure out what game Atari game
yes,
it is.
They're
going
they're
through,
cycling
all
through all of them.
And they find the right one, and then it's a guy basically trying to beat the game for a long time. He takes forever to beat that
Atari
game.
Atari games are
he
so
gets
hard.
Pretty far.
Oh, yeah.
Atari games are very difficult to beat.
Oh, yeah.
And some of them don't even have endings.
And, like, there's this you know, kind of fake-out moment where he beats the game, and he's like, I win! And then... he still loses the challenge. Mm-hmm. And he like they're like, oh, that's when Wade's like, oh, it's about the Easter egg, because the whole point was of the Oasis was to have fun playing games. And he's like, the Easter egg in that game was you don't find it by trying to win the game. The only way to find it is just to explore the game. And so then he gets on there and like is playing the game while there's like three different conflicts going on where he's trying to beat the game.
It gets very Star Wars Episode 1 here.
While he's trying to beat
there's
the game,
too much happening.
The big bad guy is in the Oasis trying to stop him.
We got the Gungans fighting the robots. Yeah. We got Anakin up in that ship doing something.
Yes.
And then we got Obi-Wan fighting Darth Maul.
So
there's too many things
going on. There's three levels of conflict because he's beating the Atari game while fending off
it's
the
my
bad
least
guy
favorite
in the
a
Oasis.
Movie.
And the band is fending off real-life crazy IOI police guys. In trying to ram their vehicle off the road.
Black Panther did the same thing, too. These games just keep carrying into movies, and I'm done with it. There's going to be a big battle in the next movie I see. I guarantee
ramp it. Up.
It's going to end with a giant fight for some reason.
I mean, yeah.
Just every movie. Just every movie is the same movie. Everyone's just copy and pasting things.
Yeah. And he there's like another fake-out moment where... the IOI like sets off this device that kills
everyone
that was on the planet.
Mm-hmm.
And you're like, wow, everyone's gone. Everyone lost all their stuff, including TJ Miller's dude. who was there for like some weird kind of comic relief slash.
Yeah, like, I didn't get it.
That was terrible. He's not in the book. That character was written before the film.
I didn't know why that character was necessary.
It wasn't needed.
No. Just wasted my time.
And you're like, oh no, everyone's dead. But Wade is still in the game because he had bet the butler, or the caretaker of this museum early in the film, about one of the memories.
How many of the results did Kira's name get mentioned? Yes. Who is the girl that they dance with in the Southwest?
And the guy had given him a quarter when he won the bet, and the quarter turns out to be an extra life. So he gets that. So it's you get that extra fake out, and he beats the game, gets the egg.
Yeah, which is fun because then he has no interruptions. He can just play this game and yeah. finish it off.
Right.
After and, this giant right. battle happened. And, but there's still a conflict in his real world as well.
Yes. So then he has this interaction with, I guess, what is sort of an AI version of Halliday? Like, that's what the movie kind of implies, because like, he's like, you're really dead. And he's like, yeah, I'm really dead. And he's like, then what are you? And he's like, well, and kind of leaves.
There's like a second level of like Black Mirror-ish, I think.
Yeah, like, there's sort of like this, he is now in the game.
That's
yeah,
what I think that is.
Right. Mm-hmm. I wasn't sure if they're trying to say that he built an AI of himself or if he transferred himself sort of into the
I think that's what happened.
Space.
I think he USB-drived his brain to yeah. the game on his deathbed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so he does get the egg and he wins, and that's when Simon Pegg's guy in real life shows up. That's like the first time you see him outside
which is
of the
unfortunate.
Memory.
Yeah, it is unfortunate because he's not in the movie.
My understanding is that he plays a much bigger role in the book.
He helps the characters get into
he
the
like brings
end,
them
end
together
the quest.
And
yeah.
helps them finish the thing.
Gives them the best equipment.
He's much more active in that. In this yes. one, he's very much, you don't even see him, and like his company is at stake, and he is not involved until the very yes. end of this film where he shows up with the contract to sign.
He also has the most interaction with Halliday, so he like tells them stories and
yeah.
expresses how funny, like this guy that you loved and obsessed with, he was actually a great guy. He was my best friend.
Which is interesting because then that means that Simon Pegg, when he's in that museum, like the Halliday Museum, he's a real
this.
Person.
Yeah.
Like,
it turns
what
out,
is he
so
doing?
Yeah, this caretaker of the museum turns out actually is Simon Pegg, I guess, in real life. So his yeah. day is spent just hanging out in this museum.
Yeah, it doesn't make sense.
That's what he does all day
now? That doesn't make sense. It should just be like
that
a...
That doesn't make sense.
It should just be like a... I don't even know what you call that, but like just a character that's there to give you information.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it could just be just the character.
It's a fake character.
Like, why does it have to be Simon Pegg in, like,
yeah,
the actual
it
thing?
Makes no sense. Unless he... Although, I guess, unless like maybe it's just like pre-recorded
I guess,
stuff.
Yeah, I guess... I think what they were trying to imply is that him as the caretaker was still trying to help them win the challenge. Like, he was kind of
yeah,
on their side the whole time. But that is not clear.
No.
It not in any way. Like, it doesn't... I only thought about
he's
it later.
I'm
like,
movie,
I guess
really.
He sort of... But he was
it's
not very helpful outside of giving him
and he was
life.
Doing press for it, too. I saw he did an interview yeah. on, like, Stephen Colbert's show or something mm-hmm. like that. And I didn't watch it, but I was just like, he's doing press for this movie, but he's not really in the movie. He's mm-hmm. in, like, three scenes, and that's it.
Yeah.
That role was written for Gene Wilder. Before he passed.
Mm. Which makes sense because the whole thing is very Willy Wonka-esque.
And maybe those limited scenes would have been enough for him, like a few days of shooting.
Mm-hmm.
So they just gave it to him instead. I don't
know.
Oh, that's kind of a bummer now.
Yeah, it's a big time bummer, isn't it?
That would have been nice.
That would have been really fun.
It would have been a great send-off.
Oh, yeah. But yeah, overall, I enjoyed the film way more than I thought I would. I thought I would hate it because I did not like the book.
There's some weird unnecessary action scenes.
I'm actually curious to try and go back and maybe read the book now that I've seen the movie and got into it.
I
I'm
like
more
the book
invested
a lot
now,
just,
and I'm willing
it's
to
just
get through
slower
the
and it's yeah. more isolated.
I kind of want to try that because I also think the book will give me more of the world building I was looking for in the movie, and I kind of want that. So
yeah, I think that the movie is fun. There was maybe a little bit more to desire from it than what they showed us.
Mm-hmm. I think this is also a movie I think that easily could have gone wrong had it not been someone like Spielberg running it.
I don't think the movie would have got made without Spielberg.
Yeah, and I think it could have easily been just a garbage pile of stuff on screen. If I think he was one of the few people that I think could pull off a movie like this. And I don't think this is some sort of legend-like movie that's a landmark or anything, but it was fun.
Well, you also have to imagine that Spielberg does a movie like every year now. So how much heart does he really have?
Well, and how much directing did he really do?
And directing.
Because there was only so much real-life stuff. I don't know how much he was present for all the CGI stuff that the artists
he's doing. Overseeing everything. But, his name's at the helm. But yeah. Like, how much does he really care about this being a great film?
Yeah. You only have to be on set a couple of days for all the real-world
stuff. I don't
know.
He seems like he's pretty dedicated to the movies that he makes.
Yeah.
I'm sure he was there like kind of – he might not have been creating like the characters themselves mm-hmm. and visually how they looked. But he's probably kind of directing like – the shots and stuff. And maybe not like the background stuff.
And I think it's kind of interesting for someone like him who was such a prolific.
Does he have any references in the film?
That's exactly what I was wondering. If there was,
is there an Indiana Jones reference?
When you're Steven Spielberg, who made all these amazing films through the 70s and 80s, and you're doing a movie all himself. About 80s culture, I'm like, that's kind of a weird.
Yeah, there was no E.T.
There really wasn't.
Was there a mention of the Ark from Indiana Jones?
Maybe.
He like cut himself out.
Yeah.
Maybe he did that on purpose.
The Jurassic Park dinosaur, is that his dinosaur?
There was a T-Rex, but. Yeah, there was not. Like, you didn't have like a Jaws pop up, but that's 70s, I guess.
He didn't reference himself at all.
No. Which, I mean, I guess is.
Maybe he should have.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Hard to say.
He probably tried to avoid that just so people weren't like, oh, he's just showing, he's like
putting his own
only
stuff
referencing himself and full of himself and all that. You don't want to get into that kind of argument.
Mm-hmm.
I will say that I wish that they worked a little bit more on how the characters looked or how their avatars looked, because I don't think that they're really like memorable looking people.
No.
Yeah.
Artemis, I guess, is the most, but. Shao and Daito for sure are just interchangeable.
Oh, yeah.
It's like samurai guys.
Yeah, I wasn't really. You can't tell the difference between them.
Nah. H is just tall.
Yeah.
And Percival is just the most generic one.
Yeah.
He looks like a reboot.
He does kind of look like a reboot.
He looks like the guy from Reboot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I wish they worked more on that.
Man. Now you say he really does look like the guy from Reboot. I was thinking about it, but I'm like, yeah, that's exactly it.
Yeah. Just like a blonde version, I guess.
Mm. But, yeah. So, yeah, I guess I'm testament that if you didn't care for the book, give the movie a shot, though. I mean, you might like it.
It's a Spielberg film, yeah. So it's got to make the list some way or another.
Yeah.
Those things are going to watch.
Yeah.
It hit the mark, but it didn't do better than the mark.
Yes. Yes.
I wanted it to, it didn't exceed expectations.
It was a movie.
But it met them, which I guess is a lot for a movie to do.
Yeah.
Like any movie that comes out and meets expectations, you kind of just got to be happy.
It exceeded mine in that I liked it and I didn't think I would. This is not a film. I might revisit it just to try and catch some references maybe, but it's not a movie that I'm like, oh, man.
I want deeper cuts. I want critters in this movie.
Oh, man.
I want chuds all over the place, you know?
Gremlins.
Let's get real deep into this lore.
Oh, man.
I also wonder, like, would this movie be any good? And I know it's based off a book, but let's kind of step away from that for a second. But would this movie be good if it didn't reference at all, like, the 80s and pop culture and stuff? It would be terrible.
It would be extremely genuine.
I feel like that's the thing that's really kind of holding this thing up is, like, pop culture references.
Yep. I absolutely agree. This movie wouldn't work without the references. It wouldn't keep anyone's interest enough to without it. I think that's – you keep waiting to see what you're going to catch next.
It would be nothing. It wouldn't be a movie.
I'd be like, oh, it's a guy racing in the thing, and then, oh, they're over here at this place, but whatever. I don't know.
Here's a big question. Are new references ever going to get made anymore, or are we just going to keep referencing our old stuff?
Because
everything keeps remaking.
Yeah, but that's
redoing.
Been going on since forever.
But let's talk about in your life, like, what's a new thing to love, you know? What's a new thing to reference and enjoy a property?
Well, fidget spinners.
Even in this film,
the emoji movie.
Like I said, even in this film, they had Overwatch references, which is a new game.
Those are new things,
which doesn't really necessarily get that. So I think there's still enough original IPs kind of being generated. It's not all throwbacks. That is, it does feel like so many movies now are just reboots or sequels to
specifically 80s
films.
That's because they are.
But yeah.
And now we're going into the 90s, I guess, a new Manji. We're rebooting some old stuff.
We're getting
stuff.
It back into the 90s stuff. There's always that resurgence. It's always like 20-year cycles. Everyone kind of, whoever like the primary demographic is always
makes
looking
sense,
20 years
people,
back
because
that's your formative years. Mm-hmm. So you're thinking about that. So now we're getting into 90s nostalgia. Yeah. I don't know.
What was your favorite thing in the movie? Mine was Mechagodzilla. That was in the book. And I was so happy that I saw Mechagodzilla.
Mechagodzilla was good.
In a movie.
I think mine was the original race. Like the DeLorean doing the race stuff was pretty cool. I liked it. I enjoyed that.
Yeah. I really liked The Shining. Like mm-hmm.
That was
the
really
one
cool.
thing that
yeah.
I that stood out.
What about
for me?
The Chucky doll? What about the holy hand
doll
grenade?
Fun. Oh, I did like, I loved the Iron Giant referencing mm-hmm. Terminator when
yeah.
he
yes.
was falling
That's
down
right.
into the lava. He did
that
the thumbs
good.
Up. Yeah. I laughed at that. No one else
no.
responded.
Well,
I didn't catch it until you mentioned it. I was like, oh, of course. Why?
I was like, that was a T2 reference.
Didn't connect it. Yeah. So everyone gets different things out of it based on what they're familiar with, I think, pop culture wise. So I think that's kind of a fun thing. Like, multiple people can have different experiences watching the film just based on the references they get versus the ones, because there's so many.
Yeah.
So
there's a lot of like just background references too.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Like, if you pause it, you can see, oh, that's
you could pause one scene. So many little Easter eggs all over the place. This is going to be the trivia section for this on IMDb is going to get absurdly humongous because everyone's going to list every single reference.
I totally imagine that Steven Spielberg did put all of his movies in there, but they're like so far in the background.
They've got to be. I mean, yeah. I mean, they've been talking, he does all that stuff for, you know, all sorts of stuff. They talk like for the new Star Trek, there was an R2-D2 and some of the debris. Like, hey, filmmakers always put little references like that in their films. So I have to believe that he's got a bunch of
stuff. I want to see what didn't get into the movie. What was on the cutting room floor for the references?
That'd be kind of interesting.
And there might be like a director's cut.
Let's get a behind the scenes of Ready Player
One.
Or
an extended version, I should say.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Is there going to be another one?
No.
Ready Player Two? Player Two.
No.
The movie didn't make enough money?
No.
Well, I don't think
I don't think Steven Spielberg would be the one to do that.
They built all this stuff already. They got all the CG elements ready.
Maybe.
They can just plug it into a new film.
They could. I don't think they should.
It doesn't matter what you
think. I don't think they should.
Well, who produced this?
I never would have expected a new Manji.
Yeah, who was above? Was anybody above Amblin?
I don't know. I forget who else was.
I don't remember what else was listed on that.
Not sure.
But
if it's that, then it would be him doing it.
Yeah, I don't know. I really hope they don't.
Which
though,
I didn't know Amblin was still a thing, and I know I said that when the movie was starting.
It's just his company.
Yeah,
just,
I thought his company was DreamWorks now.
He probably owns both.
I'm sure
he does
both.
Own both.
Anytime he's the director, it's always an Amblin thing. It's always stuck in there. Same with like J.J. Abrams.
Maybe,
like,
yeah, maybe
Bad Robot was listed on DreamWorks, the new Star Wars because he's directing, and it's like, yeah, it's just.
But
their
I thought he had like moved away from Amblin into DreamWorks with a couple of his other buddies. They founded that.
If you haven't seen the
Steven Spielberg documentary
Spielberg.
Yep. Steven Spielberg.
got him.
Documentary on HBO. It is fantastic. It kind of goes through many of his movies and how he started. And
but don't watch that. Watch the Andre the Giant one because that one just came out. So
what's it called?
What's that one for? Andre the Giant documentary came out today.
Oh, that's right.
Oh, today? Oh.
Today.
I didn't know that.
Guys, let's watch that first.
Let's get out of here and go watch that right now. Let's go see it. All right.
I think we're ready.
Yeah, let's go.
All right. Thanks for having us. We've been What We Remember. Find us at whatremember.com. Search for us anywhere at your podcast app of choice. What We Remember. Twitter.com/whatremember. Facebook.com/whatremember. We are What We Remember. We do another podcast where we try to remember movies we haven't seen in a very long time. That's it. Plug, plug, plug.
That's us.